Chapter 8. You, Lord, who make men of one mind to dwell in one house, brought to our company a young man of our town, Evodius. He had held office in the civil service, had been converted and baptized before us, had resigned from the state service, and given himself to yours. We kept together, meaning to live together in our devout purpose. We thought deeply as to the place in which we might serve you most usefully. As a result, we started back for Africa, and when we had come as far as Ostia on the Tiber, my mother died. I pass over many things, for I must make haste. Do you, O my God, accept my confessions and my gratitude for countless things of which I say nothing. But I will not omit anything my mind brings forth concerning her, your servant, who brought me forth in the flesh to this temporal light, and in her heart to light eternal. Not of her gifts do I speak, but of your gifts in her. For she did not bring herself into the world, or educate herself in the world. It was you who created her, nor did her father or mother know what kind of being was to come forth from them. It was the scepter of your Christ, the discipline of your only begotten, that brought her up in holy fear, in a Catholic family which was a worthy member of your church. Yet it was not the devotion of her mother in her upbringing that she talked most of, but of a certain aged servant, who had indeed carried my mother's father on her back when he was a baby, as little ones are accustomed to be carried on the backs of older girls. Because of this, because also of her age and her admirable character, she was very much respected by her master and mistress in their Christian household. As a result, she was given charge of her master's daughters. This charge she fulfilled most conscientiously, checking them sharply when necessary with holy severity, and teaching them soberly and prudently. Thus, except at the times when they ate, and that most temperately, at their parents' table, she would not let them even drink water, no matter how tormenting their thirst. By this she prevented the forming of a bad habit, and she used to mark very sensibly, "Now you drink water because you are not allowed to have wine, but when you are married, and thus mistresses of food stores and wine cellars, you will despise water, but the habit of drinking will still remain." By this kind of teaching and the authority of her commands, she moderated the greediness that goes with childhood, and brought the little girl's thirst to such a control that they no longer wanted what they ought not to have. Yet, as your servant told me, her son, there did steal upon my mother an inclination to wine. For when in the usual way she was sent by her parents as a well-behaved child to draw wine from the barrel, she would dip the cup in, but before pouring the wine from the cup into the flagon, she would sip a little with the very tip of her lips, only a little because she did not yet like the taste sufficiently to take more. Indeed, she did it not out of any craving for wine, but rather from the excess of childhood's high spirits, which tend to boil over in absurdities, and are usually kept in check by the authority of elders. And so, adding to that daily drop a little more from day to day, for he that despises small things falls little by little, she fell into the habit, so that she would drink off greedily cups almost full of wine. Where then was that wise old woman with her forceful prohibitions? Could anything avail against the evil in us, unless your healing, O Lord, watched over us? When our father and mother and nurses are absent, you are present, who created us, who call us, who can use those placed over us for some good unto the salvation of our souls. What did you do then, O my God? How did you cure her and bring her to health? From another soul you drew a harsh and cutting sarcasm, as though bringing forth a surgeon's knife from your secret store, and with one blow amputated that sore place. A maidservant with whom she was accustomed to go to the cellar one day fell into a quarrel with her small mistress when no one else chanced to be about, and hurled at her the most biting insult possible, calling her a drunkard. My mother was pierced to the quick, saw her fault in its true wickedness, and instantly condemned it and gave it up. Just as the flattery of a friend can pervert, so the insult of an enemy can sometimes correct. Nor do you, O God, reward men according to what you do by means of them, but according to what they themselves intended. For the girl, being in a temper, wanted to enrage her young mistress, not to amend her, for she did it when no one else was there, either because the time and place happened to be thus when the quarrel arose, or because she was afraid that elders would be angry because she had not told it sooner. But you, O Lord, ruler of heavenly things and earthly, who turn to your own purposes the very depths of rivers as they run, and order the turbulence of the flow of time, did by the folly of one mind bring sanity to another, thus reminding us not to attribute it to our own power if another is amended by our word, even if we meant to amend him. Chapter 9. My mother, then, was modestly and soberly brought up, being rather made obedient to her parents by you than to you by her parents. When she reached the age for marriage and was bestowed upon a husband, she served him as her lord. She used all her effort to win him to you, preaching you to him by her character, by which you made her beautiful to her husband, respected and loved by him, and admirable in his sight. For she bore his acts of unfaithfulness quietly, and never had any jealous scene with her husband about them. She awaited your mercy upon him, that he might grow chaste through faith in you. And as a matter of fact, though generous beyond measure, he had a very hot temper. But she knew that a woman must not resist a husband in anger, by deed or even by word. Only, when she saw him calm again and quiet, she would take the opportunity to give him an explanation of her actions, if it happened that he had been roused to anger unreasonably. The result was that, whereas many matrons with much milder husbands carried the marks of blows to disfigure their faces, and would all get together to complain of the way their husbands behaved, my mother, talking lightly but meaning it seriously, advised them against their tongues, saying that from the day they heard the matrimonial contract read to them, they should regard it as an instrument by which they become servants, and from that time they should be mindful of their condition, and not set themselves up against their masters. And they often expressed amazement, for they knew how violent a husband she had to live with, that it had never been heard, and there was no mark to show, that Patricius had beaten his wife, or that there had been any family quarrel between them for so much as a single day. And when her friends asked her the reason, she taught them her rule, which was as I have just said. Those who followed it found it good and thanked her. Those who did not went on being bullied and beaten. Her mother-in-law began by being angry with her because of the whispers of malicious servants, but my mother won her completely by the respect she showed, and her unfailing patience and mildness. She ended by going to her son, telling him of the tales the servants had bandied about to the destruction of peace in the family between herself and her daughter-in-law, and asking him to punish them for it. So he, out of obedience to his mother, and in the interests of order in the household and peace among his womenfolk, had the servants beaten whose names he had been given, as she had asked when giving them. To which she added the promise that anyone must expect a similar reward from her own hands who should think to please her by speaking ill of her daughter-in-law. And as no one had the courage to do so, they lived together with the most notable degree of kindness and harmony. This great gift also, O my God, my mercy, you gave to your good servant, in whose womb you created me, that she showed herself, wherever possible, a peacemaker between people quarreling and minds at discord. For swelling and undigested discord often belches forth bitter words when, in the venom of intimate conversation with a present friend, hatred at its rawest is breathed out upon an absent enemy. But when my mother heard bitter things said by each of the other, she never said anything to either about the other, save what would help to reconcile them. This might seem a small virtue, if I had not had the sorrow of seeing for myself so many people who, as if by some horrible widespreading infection of sin, not only tell angry people the things their enemy said in anger, but even add things that were never said at all. Whereas, on the contrary, ordinary humanity would seem to require not merely that we refrain from exciting or increasing wrath among men by evil speaking, but that we study to extinguish wrath by kind speaking. Such a one was she, and you were the master who taught her most secretly in the school of her heart. The upshot was that towards the very end of his life she won her husband to you, and once he was a Christian, she no longer had to complain of the things she had had to bear with before he was a Christian. Further, she was a servant of your servants. Such of them as knew her praised and honored and loved you, O God, in her, for they felt your presence in her heart, showing itself in the fruit of her holy conversation. She had been the wife of one husband, had requited her parents, had governed her house piously, was well reported of for good works. She had brought up her children, being in labor of them as often as she saw them swerving away from you. Finally, of all of us your servants, O Lord, since by your gift you suffer us to speak, who before her death were living together after receiving the grace of baptism, she took as much care as if she had been the mother of us all, and served us as if she had been the daughter of us all. Chapter 10. When the day was approaching on which she was to depart this life, a day that you knew, though we did not, it came about, as I believe by your secret arrangement, that she and I stood alone leaning in a window which looked inwards to the garden within the house where we were staying, at Ostia on the Tiber. For there we were away from everybody, resting for the sea voyage from the weariness of our long journey by land. There we walked together, she and I alone, in deep joy. And forgetting the things that were behind, and looking forward to those that were before, we were discussing in the presence of truth, which you are, what the eternal life of the saints could be like, which eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has it entered into the heart of man. But with the mouth of our heart we panted for the high waters of your fountain, the fountain of life which is with you, that being sprinkled from that fountain according to our capacity, we might in some sense meditate upon so great a matter. And our conversation had brought us to this point, that any pleasure whatsoever of the bodily senses, in any brightness whatsoever of corporeal light, seemed to us not worthy of comparison with the pleasure of that eternal light, not worthy even of mention. Rising as our love flamed upward towards that self-same, we passed in review the various levels of bodily things, up to the heavens themselves, whence sun and moon and stars shine upon this earth. And higher still we soared, thinking in our minds and speaking and marveling at your works. And so we came to our own souls, and went beyond them to come at last to that region of richness unending, where you feed Israel forever with the food of truth. And there life is that wisdom by which all things are made, both the things that have been and the things that are yet to be. But this wisdom itself is not made. It is as it has ever been, and so it shall be forever. indeed has ever been and shall be forever, have no place in it, but it simply is, for it is eternal, whereas to have been and to be going to be are not eternal. And while we were thus talking of his wisdom and panting for it, with all the effort of our heart we did for one instant attain to touch it. Then, sighing and leaving the first fruits of our spirit bound to it, we returned to the sound of our own tongue, in which a word has both beginning and ending. For what is like to your word, our Lord, who abides in himself forever, yet grows not old and makes all things new? So we said, if to any man the tumult of the flesh grew silent, silent the images of earth and sea and air, and if the heavens grew silent, and the very soul grew silent to herself, and by not thinking of self mounted beyond self, if all dreams and imagined visions grew silent, and every tongue and every sign and whatsoever is transient, for indeed if any man could hear them, he should hear them saying with one voice, we did not make ourselves, but he made us who abides forever. But if, having uttered this and so set us to listening to him who made them, they all grew silent, and in their silence he alone spoke to us, not by them but by himself, so that we should hear his word not by any tongue of flesh, nor the voice of an angel, nor the sound of thunder, nor in the darkness of a parable, but that we should hear himself whom in all these things we love, should hear himself and not them, just as we too had but now reached forth and in a flash of the mind attained to touch the eternal wisdom which abides over all, and if this could continue, and all other visions so different be quite taken away, and this one should so ravish and absorb and wrap the beholder in inward joys that his life should eternally be such as that one moment of understanding for which we had been sighing, would not this be, enter thou into the joy of the Lord? But when shall it be? Shall it be when we shall rise again, and shall not all be changed? Such thoughts I uttered, though not in that order or in those actual words, but you know, O Lord, that on that day when we talked of these things, the world with all its delights seemed cheap to us in comparison with what we talked of. And my mother said, Son, for my own part, I no longer find joy in anything in this world. What I am still to do here and why I am here, I know not, now that I no longer hope for anything from this world. One thing there was for which I desired to remain still a little longer in this life, that I should see you a Catholic Christian before I died. This God has granted me in superabundance, in that I now see you his servant to the contempt of all worldly happiness. What then am I doing here? Chapter 11. What answer I made, I do not clearly remember. Within 5 days or not much longer, she fell into a fever, and in her sickness she one day fainted away, and for the moment lost consciousness. We ran to her, but she quickly returned to consciousness, and seeing my brother and me standing by her, she said as one wondering, Where was I? Then looking closely upon us as we stood wordless in our grief, she said, Here you will bury your mother. I stayed silent and checked my weeping, but my brother said something to the effect that he would be happier if she were to die in her own land and not in a strange country. But as she heard this, she looked at him anxiously, restraining him with her eye because he savored of earthly things, and then she looked at me and said, See the way he talks. And then she said to us both, Lay this body wherever it may be. Let no care of it disturb you. This only I ask of you, that you should remember me at the altar of the Lord, wherever you may be. And when she had uttered this wish in such words as she could manage, she fell silent as her sickness took hold of her more strongly. But as I considered your gifts, O unseen God, which you send into the hearts of your faithful to the springing up of such wonderful fruits, I was glad and gave thanks to you, remembering what I had previously known of the care as to her burial which had always troubled her, for she had arranged to be buried by the body of her husband. Because they had lived together in such harmony, she had wished, so little is the human mind capable of rising to the divine, that it should be granted her, as an addition to her happiness and as something to be spoken of among men, that after her pilgrimage beyond the sea, the earthly part of man and wife should lie together under the same earth. Just when this vain desire had begun to vanish from her heart through the fullness of your goodness, I did not know, but I was pleased and surprised that it had now so clearly vanished, though indeed in the conversation we had had together at the window, when she said, What am I still doing here? There had appeared no desire to die in her own land. Further, I heard afterwards that in the time we were at Ostia, she had talked one day to some of my friends, as a mother talking to her children, of the contempt of this life and the attraction of death. I was not there at the time. They marveled at such courage in a woman, but it was you who had given it to her, and asked if she was not afraid to leave her body so far from her own city. But she said, Nothing is far from God, and I have no fear that he will not know at the end of the world from what place he is to raise me up. And so on the 9th day of her illness, in the 56th year of her life, and the 33rd of mine, that devout and holy soul was released from the body. Chapter 12. I closed her eyes, and an immeasurable sorrow flowed into my heart, and would have overflowed into tears. But my eyes under the mind's strong constraint held back their flow, and I stood dry-eyed. In that struggle it went very ill with me. As she breathed her last, the child Adeodatus broke out into lamentation, and we all checked him and brought him to silence. But in this very fact, the childish element in me, which was breaking out into tears, was checked and brought to silence by the manlier voice of my mind. For we felt that it was not fitting that her funeral should be solemnized with moaning and weeping and lamentation, for so it is normal to weep when death is seen as sheer misery, or as complete extinction. But she had not died miserably, nor did she wholly die. Of the one thing we were sure by reason of her character, of the other by the reality of our faith. What then was it that grieved my heart so deeply? Only the newness of the wound, in finding the custom I had so loved of living with her, suddenly snapped short. It was a joy to me to have this one testimony from her. When her illness was close to its end, meeting with expressions of endearment such services as I rendered, she called me a dutiful, loving son, and said in the great affection of her love that she had never heard from my mouth any harsh or reproachful word addressed to herself. But what possible comparison was there, O my God who made us, between the honor I showed her and the service she had rendered me? Because I had now lost the great comfort of her, my soul was wounded and my very life torn asunder, for it had been one life made of hers and mine together. When the boy had been quieted and ceased weeping, Evodius took up the psalter and began to chant, with the whole house making the responses, the psalm, Mercy and Judgment I will sing to thee, O Lord. And when they heard what was being done, many of the brethren and religious women came to us. Those whose office it was were making arrangement for the burial, while in another part of the house, where it could properly be done, I discoursed, with friends who did not wish to leave me by myself, upon matters suitable for that time. Thus I used truth as a kind of fomentation to bring relief to my torment, a torment known to you, but not known to those others, so that listening closely to me, they thought that I lacked all feeling of grief. But in your ears, where none of them could hear, I accused the emotion in me as weakness, and I held in the flood of my grief. It was for the moment a little diminished, but returned with fresh violence, not with any outpouring of tears or change of countenance, but I knew what I was crushing down in my heart. I was very much ashamed that these human emotions could have such power over me, though it belongs to the due order and the lot of our earthly condition that they should come to us, and I felt a new grief at my grief, and so was afflicted with a twofold sorrow. When the body was taken to burial, I went and returned without tears. During the prayers which we poured forth to you when the sacrifice of our redemption was offered for her, while the body, as the custom there is, lay by the grave before it was actually buried, during those prayers I did not weep. Yet all that day I was heavy with grief within, and in the trouble of my mind I begged of you in my own fashion to heal my pain. But you would not. I imagine because you meant to impress upon my memory by this proof how strongly the bond of habit holds the mind, even when it no longer feeds upon deception. The idea came to me to go and bathe, for I had heard that the bath, which the Greeks call agoneion, is so called because it drives anxiety from the mind. And this also I acknowledge to your mercy, O Father of orphans, that I bathed and was the same man after as before. The bitterness of grief had not sweated out of my heart. Then I fell asleep and woke again to find my grief not a little relieved. And as I was in bed and no one about, I said over those true verses that your servant Ambrose wrote of you, Deus creator omnium, polique rector vestiens, diem decoro lumine, noctem sapora gratia, artus salutos ut quies, redat laboris usui, mentesque fessas alevet, luctusque solvat anxios. And then, little by little, I began to recover my former feeling about your handmaid, remembering how loving and devout was her conversation with you, how pleasant and considerate her conversation with me, of which I was thus suddenly deprived. And I found solace in weeping in your sight, both about her and for her, about myself and for myself. I no longer tried to check my tears, but let them flow as they would, making them a pillow for my heart. And it rested upon them, for it was your ears that heard my weeping, and not the ears of a man who would have misunderstood my tears and despised them. But now, O Lord, I confess it to you in writing. Let him read it who will, and interpret it as he will. And if he sees it as sin that for so small a portion of an hour I wept for my mother, now dead and departed from my sight, who had wept so many years for me that I should live ever in your sight, let him not scorn me, but rather, if he is a man of great charity, let him weep for my sins to you, the Father of all the brethren of your Christ. Chapter 13. Now that my heart is healed of that wound, in which there was perhaps too much of earthly affection, I pour forth to you, O our God, tears of a very different sort for your handmaid, tears that flow from a spirit shaken by the thought of the perils there are for every soul that dies in Adam. For though she had been made alive in Christ, and while still in the body had so lived that your name was glorified in her faith and her character, yet I dare not say that from the moment of her regeneration and baptism no word issued from her mouth contrary to your command. Your Son, who is truth, has said, Whoever shall say to his brother, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. And it would go ill with the most praiseworthy life lived by men, if you were to examine it with your mercy laid aside. But because you do not inquire too fiercely into our sins, we have hope and confidence of a place with you. Yet if a man reckons up before you the merits he truly has, what is he reckoning except your own gifts? If only men would know themselves to be but men, so that he that glories would glory in the Lord. Thus my glory in my life, God of my heart, leaving aside for this time her good deeds, for which I give thanks to thee in joy, I now pray to thee for my mother's sins. Grant my prayer through the true medicine of our wounds, who hung upon the cross, and who now sitting at thy right hand makes intercession for us. I know that she dealt mercifully, and from her heart forgave those who trespassed against her. Do thou also forgive such trespasses as she may have been guilty of in all the years since her baptism. Forgive them, Lord, forgive them, I beseech thee. Enter not into judgment with her. Let thy mercy be exalted above thy justice, for thy words are true, and thou hast promised that the merciful shall obtain mercy. That they should be merciful is thy gift, who hast mercy on whom thou wilt, and wilt have compassion on whom thou wilt. And I believe that thou hast already done what I am now asking. But be not offended, Lord, at the things my mouth would utter. For on that day when her death was so close, she was not concerned that her body should be sumptuously wrapped or embalmed with spices, nor with any thought of choosing a monument, or even for burial in her own country. Of such things she gave us no command, but only desired to be remembered at thy altar, which she had served without ever missing so much as a day, on which she knew that the holy victim was offered, by whom the handwriting is blotted out of the decree that was contrary to us, by which offering too the enemy was overcome, who, reckoning our sins and seeking what may be laid to our charge, found nothing in him, in whom we are conquerors. Who shall restore to him his innocent blood? Who shall give him back the price by which he purchased us, and so take us from him? To this sacrament of our redemption thy handmaid had bound her soul by the bond of faith. Let none wrest her from thy protection. Let neither the lion nor the dragon bar her way by force or craft. For she will not answer that she owes nothing, lest she should be contradicted and confuted by that cunning accuser. But she will answer that her debts have been remitted by him, to whom no one can hand back the price which he paid for us, though he owed it not. So let her rest in peace, together with her husband, for she had no other before nor after him, but served him, in patience bringing forth fruit for thee, and winning him likewise for thee. And inspire, O my Lord my God, inspire thy servants, my brethren, thy sons, my masters, whom I serve with heart and voice and pen, that as many of them as read this may remember at thy altar thy servant Monica, with Patricius, her husband, by whose bodies thou didst bring me into this life, though how I know not. May they with loving mind remember these who were my parents in this transitory light, my brethren who serve thee as our father and our Catholic mother, and those who are to be fellow citizens with me in the eternal Jerusalem, which thy people sigh for in their pilgrimage from birth until they come here, so that what my mother at her end asked of me may be fulfilled more richly in the prayers of so many gained for her by my confessions than by my prayers alone.